We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrand. Joining me, as always, over there in the heart of the Midwest, the epicenter of college football, the one, the only, the incomparable Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how are you?
I'm good. I suppose I should use this moment and this opportunity at the top of the show to report that the Cover 3 podcast has successfully bought me away from the Solid Verbal at $100 million over 10 years and unlimited use of the Cover 3 private jet. So, you know, we had a good run,
but at the end
of the day, Ty, I had to do what was right for me and my family.
You know, when you work with somebody for 13 years, you can just sense a restlessness in them when they decide they want a new opportunity.
Yeah.
And alas,
I didn't know if I was obvious. Yeah. But yeah, it happens. You know, it's time for a new challenge to build something new. And Chip Patterson has so much more money than I realized. And so I have to.
I love Chip. Chip's a good dude.
Chip's the best.
All right. Well, welcome back to the show. Dan is not going anywhere, at least not that I'm aware of. But that could change before the end of the show.
Oh, I'm bringing Marcus Freeman with me.
You're bringing
Marcus Freeman with you.
Okay. That makes sense. Makes perfect sense. I am Ty. He is Dan. This is the Solid Verbal College Football Podcast. Thank you so much for downloading, for listening, for playing along at home. Don't forget to go on out to our website, solidverbal.com. While you're there, please do hit the listen thing in the upper right-hand corner. Subscribe to the podcast out on Apple, on Spotify, on Google, wherever you get your fine podcasts, you can find the Solid Verbal. We very much appreciate your support. SolidGiveaway.com is where you can go for about another week or so to throw your hat in the ring if you want to win an RG3 signed mini helmet. We're going to draw that winner on December the 8th. And last but certainly not least, Verballers.com is where you can go if you want to get access to this show. And honestly, a bunch of the bonus shows that we've been doing as of late. That is our Patreon.
Yeah.
You can sign up to be a certified or premium Verballer. Your support, again, is very much appreciated. You don't just get access to the premium stuff, access to the shows early. You get access to our Discord community. People, of course, are all a flutter this time of year, not just because of the playoffs, but because of this crazy coaching carousel, Dan. I still have this sound from way back when. Do you remember?
The coaching carousel.
We have the dinosaur roar there.
Yeah.
Which,
why not?
I never lost that sound. I knew at some point we would need to use it again. And alas, here we are. We're going to have a mega show today.
Mm-hmm.
The first half of which will obviously be devoted to the news of the weird, the news of the coaching world, because there has been a lot of activity. In case you've been under a rock with coaches moving, coaches going, all sorts of crazy stuff, we're going to cover that first. And then we're going to do, as the second part of this podcast, our exhaustive preview of the 11 games that are in front of us now in this college football championship weekend, week 14.
Correct. I can confirm all of that.
Why don't we start at the very top? We have breaking news!
I don't even know where you're going first.
Man, I don't either.
Yeah.
I don't either.
Dealer's choice. No, it's you. It's Ty. We're starting with Notre Dame losing Brian Kelly to LSU.
That's two headliners since we last recorded a podcast have been Lincoln Riley going to USC, and now more recently, Brian Kelly announcing just last night, we're recording this, we should say bright and early on a Tuesday morning, Brian Kelly leaving Notre Dame, getting a mega contract from LSU. Let me ask you, before I go on my rant here,
yes,
between those two hires, right? And there have been other hires. Billy Napier was hired by Florida, which feels like an eternity ago, even though it was like 48 hours ago. Kalen DeBoer goes to Washington. I think we're both pretty bullish on that hire. We like Kalen DeBoer. Sonny Dykes and TCU made it Facebook official. We knew that was going to be a thing. Virginia Tech going to go Brent Pry, defensive coordinator.
Which you like.
Yeah, defensive coordinator from Penn State.
Mm-hmm.
Has the healthiest head of hair in FBS. I don't know if you've seen that.
I always try to pin down who Brent Pry looks like. And the closest I got was the most successful jet ski salesman in America.
Like,
he just has it. This thing can hit 75. This thing has a turning radius like you wouldn't believe. And he's made $38 million selling jet skis.
Jet ski, I have him more of a snowmobile guy because of the hair and sort of the scruff that he's got. But
I'm with it as well. Yeah.
They're close cousins. So he was hired. We'll talk about that momentarily. And Jerry Kill, congrats to Jerry Kill. He's going to be the new head football coach at New Mexico State. But the two stunners were obviously Lincoln Riley going to USC, Brian Kelly going to LSU. Let me ask you, which of those two did you find most stunning?
Probably the Lincoln Riley was more of a surprise given from where he was going to, or from where he was coming to where he was going, because Oklahoma is an unreal job. Not that Notre Dame isn't, but given Lincoln Riley's youth, given Lincoln Riley's momentum in developing quarterbacks and taking the program to the playoff, and look, we're talking about a very similar path that Brian Kelly's done in terms of taking Notre Dame to the playoff as well, and the move to the SEC puts Oklahoma on a new platform, right, with the Big 12 struggles to expand and really establish itself on the level of the Big 10 and the SEC, that like everything's coming up. Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma. He's recruiting nationally. He's recruiting in California. I think Caleb Williams is from the D.C. area. Like, it was a well-oiled machine at Oklahoma. The fact that he was winning the conference like he was until this year. That took me by surprise, especially given his own geographic footprint and his history going back. I mean, he was at ECU, but where he went to college at Texas Tech, going to USC is... It's not the jump that Brian Kelly to LSU is, in that LSU has had so much recent success, disappointment at the same time, but recent success in that what they did in 2019 and what they're able to do year in, year out on the recruiting cycle, on the recruiting trail. I was more surprised by Lincoln Riley. It doesn't seem as obvious a fit to me, and neither does Brian Kelly to LSU, but at least Brian Kelly's been at Notre Dame forever, and you can talk yourself into, in a way that you can't with Lincoln Riley, I understand Notre Dame's ceiling right now. Whether it's because of the academic restrictions in getting every kid into Notre Dame that you would like to, and seeing Notre Dame on those huge stages and not necessarily looking like they belong, be it against Clemson at full strength in the ACC championship last year, their playoff appearances against Clemson and Alabama, there certainly seemed to be a gulf on a certain level where I could understand it being frustrating for Brian Kelly to lose in the way that he did in those moments. So I understand that desire for something new after, 11 years? Lincoln Riley hasn't been in Norman forever. What surprised you more, if you can put a more objective hat, even though you're a Notre Dame fan?
Well, the Lincoln Riley thing. The Lincoln Riley thing was a stone cold stunner. no joke intended there.
No, I mean, that's
It just was.
Yeah.
Lincoln Riley was rumored to LSU shortly before he accepted that USC job. It does not surprise me that any of these guys would be in demand. Obviously, they've been very successful.
Right.
The Lincoln Riley thing, I think, took me more by surprise because of what you mentioned time and again. he's sort of at the height of his powers right now, right? It's not
sure.
like he, it's not like this is a program at Oklahoma that's in decline. Recruiting has been very strong. They're still getting top flight talent. They are recruiting nationally. And presumably that's a place he could be until he's like 75 years old, right? There was no reason for him to leave unless he was in search of a new opportunity. And, you know, the money obviously and the perks and all that stuff, I think factors into it, but it's actually a similar story with Brian Kelly at Notre Dame. Now, Brian Kelly is 20 plus years, Lincoln Riley's senior. But
yes,
I think if you have paid any attention now to what Jack Swarbrick has said via his press conference, it was never a situation where he went and tried to leverage one deal against another, or there was something at the university that wasn't quite up to snuff. It was really just more in search of a new challenge and a new opportunity. Something that, you know, if these guys weren't coaches, most of us could relate to. The fact that they're under the microscope, the fact that they get paid so much money, obviously there's going to be a lot of hot takes and opinion out there, but it seems they have a common thread in that both of them were searching for something new and exciting, and they were able to find it. Lincoln Riley in USC, Brian Kelly in LSU.
Yeah, and you're right. I think the Brian Kelly difference might be the idea of, if not now, when, right?
Right?
If there was ever any inkling for Brian Kelly, be it to the NFL, be it to another program at another part of the country, whatever, if not now, when? How old is Brian Kelly? He's about 60?
Right, right.
So that I think comes into play on a certain level. But yeah, the Lincoln Riley thing, and I don't know if it's him feeling that he couldn't build at Oklahoma what would be necessary to win the SEC in the way that he was able to win the Big 12. Maybe he had his doubts about that. But at the same time, both of these dudes saw the bag, and that bag has not 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or even 8, but 9 digits associated with it, right? Is my math correct? $100 million dollars means yep. 9 digits?
Your math is correct.
Okay. So it can't be discounted that that's, even though they were making $4, 5, 6, 7 million, $10 million is that many more million dollars more, and or 10 million plus, given whatever the incentives and perks. I saw Lincoln Riley's 2 houses in Norman were purchased by USC, $500,000 over asking. So there's your $1 million signing bonus.
Talk about and screwing over your neighbors, huh?
unlimited use of the private plane associated with USC, 24/7 for family members. Let me tell you something. As somebody with a brother who has worked, my brother worked for a charter in high school, fuel ain't cheap. Fuel ain't cheap. So, man, and maintenance. Let's talk about Brian Kelly at LSU. I think Notre Dame's going to be fine. I think LSU is going to be fine. Do you like the hire for LSU? Do you foresee LSU getting back to a certain level that they expect because of this hire and what Brian Kelly presumably will be able to do both in hiring and recruiting and in-game coaching?
Yeah, Brian Kelly at all of his stops has been very good at the process of the slow build. Now, at a place like LSU, that process will go quicker. It's just easier to get talent. So I think he's proven every step of the way that he knows how to build a program. If you're LSU, if you are in search of stability, if you are in search of raising the floor as much as possible, Brian Kelly's a pretty good fit.
Sure.
I'm very curious to see what he does with his coordinators. Now, there has been some speculation just before we went on the air here that he's reached out to both Tommy Rees and Marcus Freeman.
Yeah.
It would hurt if they lost Marcus Freeman given his ties to recruiting at Notre Dame. Many folks are on the record with Marcus Freeman taking that recruiting operation to the next level.
Right.
If he wants to take Tommy Rees, I'm fine with that. You can take Tommy Rees. Okay. I think LSU can do better than Tommy Rees, personally.
I saw he was likely retaining Corey Raymond, the LSU DBs coach,
the LSU
been
guy,
pretty
yep.
great.
Sure.
So that's a key ability to for some continuity on that side of things. Yeah.
So do I like the hire? It feels like an odd fit, I think, on the surface. Ultimately, if you win, the culture thing goes out the window. Nobody cares.
Yeah.
So I think it's fine. If you're Scott Woodward, if you're looking at Lincoln Riley go elsewhere, if you're seeing other big name college football coaches sign long-term big money extensions with their existing jobs, I imagine you're looking at the clock you're looking at the calendar and you're thinking, we got to make a move here. We have to, we have to do something. We have to make a splash. We've been hearing for weeks now that he wants to make that splash higher. For what it's worth, Jack Swarbrick was not surprised, at least so he claims in his press conference. He said that there was a restlessness. We sort of alluded to it at the top of the show.
Mm-hmm.
He had sort of expected that maybe Brian Kelly was looking around at other opportunities, especially given this coaching market. So it does not surprise me LSU would be interested in his services given what he did at Notre Dame. It does not surprise me that Brian Kelly would be interested in leaving given the time that he spent at Notre Dame. You'll recall 5 years ago, I thought Brian Kelly was going to leave Notre Dame. So I'm not all that surprised either. What I will say is very surprising is the timing.
Yeah.
And I understand that there is a need to get a coach in there because of recruiting purposes in hopes of just building your program and establishing as much continuity as you can before the end of the calendar year, before the end of the recruiting cycle.
Sure.
But Notre Dame could make the playoff.
They could.
And that could present a very, very interesting circumstance for the Fighting Irish. If the committee would let them in with their head coach and perhaps some assistants walking out the door, that would certainly be unprecedented, right? That a coach of a potential playoff team would leave before his team gets there.
Yep.
But these are unprecedented times. As he said, nine-figure contracts are being handed out like candy at Halloween at this point. So I don't know. It's a stunning move on both fronts. I probably like the hire better for LSU than I do for USC, if only because of something that you said on the stream that we did. USC sort of now has a type, don't they?
They do have a type.
They like to chase the hot young offensive mind. Not to say Lincoln Riley will follow in the footsteps of the Sarks and the Lanes of the world, but
who are dealing with their own difficulties, both as it relates to on and off field situations. Obviously, Lane Kiffin with the sanctions that USC was facing and roster sizes, but he fielded some bad offenses at USC near the end there, highlighted by that Washington State loss. And then Sark with his demons off the field affecting the way he was able to run that program and the way he was able to compose himself while running a very high profile program certainly affected things. And so it's not fully fair to criticize, but you're right, USC has a type, but they finally have they finally went off type with the AD, which I think has helped things significantly in getting things right in LA.
Yeah, I mean, the Lynn Swann hire puzzled a lot of people. And, you know, so to bring Mike Bone in to go out to get a guy like a Lincoln Riley, it represents a huge success for the program, definitely has injected new enthusiasm, not just into USC, but the whole Pac-12.
Right.
My God, they're hailing Lincoln Riley as the savior of the Pac-12 in some circles. So I don't know if I go to that extreme. I like the hire. I just don't think I like it as much as I like the Brian Kelly hire because it is more of a track record there for building up a program. What will be very interesting also on the Notre Dame front is who do they hire next? I watched the full press conference from Jack Swarbrick. He is not naming an interim head coach. He also said that he does not see a quote unquote interim as a promotion. So I don't know how much you read between the lines on that front. I kind of take it as a move to retain as much of the current staff as possible, given the fact that there could be a playoff game. We will know a lot more after this weekend. After Sunday, when we get the final playoff rankings, if Notre Dame is in, I think this thing takes a much, much different course than it would if, in fact, Notre Dame is not in. You know, if I had a bet right now, I'd say Marcus Freeman. Again, this is Tuesday. A lot can change by the time this drops at 6 a.m. on Wednesday morning.
You're saying a bet for the next head coach of Notre Dame.
Ultimately, if I'm betting on the next head football coach at Notre Dame, my money right now is on Marcus Freeman. I think there's going to be a lot of internal, as Pete Sampson has said from The Athletic, internal decision makers who are aboard that hire as him being the next great thing. It is a bit of a risk. Second would probably be Fickell, followed by Matt Campbell.
Yeah, I'm with you on all three. My only difference is I would... The thinking with Marcus Freeman is he's young, he's energetic, he's recruiting, and he's put together a great class, helped to put together a great class in 2022. This is a long-term decision. This cannot be about the 2022 class. Now, it's great to retain that class, but the best long-term decision to me is an obvious one, and it's Luke Fickell. If you can get Luke Fickell, if you can come together and figure out price and perks and all that stuff, I just think it's a no-brainer. I think it's an absolute no-brainer to get Luke Fickell. And I know Notre Dame has very infrequently hired a head coach without head coaching experience. I don't know what Charlie Weiss's experience was like at the time they hired him, but I don't think he had been a head coach.
No.
They had hired him off of the strength of the Patriots tenure that he had. Obviously, Brian Kelly had left an undefeated Cincinnati in this very similar way to how he left Notre Dame for LSU. I think LSU is going to be in good hands. I don't know that he is a killer when competing with Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban and Kirby Smart and whatever it is that Billy Napier does at Florida and the rest of the powers of the SEC, whatever Josh Heupel's building, whatever Sam Pittman's building. Like, that's, and then, of course, Texas and Oklahoma. I think he's going to do a very good job. He's recruited nationally. He's recruited Louisiana. He's recruited the South, not like other guys in the region have recruited the South and Louisiana, but that's not like he was exclusively recruiting Ohio and Indiana. And it should also be noted, the best quarterback in LSU history from Brian Kelly's footprint, from Ohio and Joe Burrow. So I think it becomes quite interesting for LSU, and I think it's a good hire, and LSU is going to spend. They're absolutely going to spend and put Brian Kelly in the best possible position in terms of hiring coaches and putting together recruiting departments and whatever he needs to compete with who LSU is competing against in the SEC. As for Lincoln Riley, I think it's a very, very good hire, but I think at some places, similar problems crop up for different coaches. And I'm a little bit worried that Lincoln Riley has not been able to field a good defense consistently, or a pretty good defense, or an average defense consistently in Norman, and is bringing Alex Grinch. I know people were pointing to the fact that Alex Grinch knows the Pac-12. When Alex Grinch was last in the Pac-12, 2017, 2016, none of these offensive coordinators, none of these quarterbacks existed in the conference. I guess Britton Covey probably was, but other than him, it's a very different Pac-12. And so I'm curious to see. Lincoln Riley is going to need to recruit nationally. He's going to need to restore that USC brand nationally on the recruiting trail because it has taken a significant hit. Recruits on the West Coast and nationally are higher on Oregon at the moment as a West Coast brand. It might be different in 2 weeks. It might be different in 2 years. But right now, USC has a lot of work to do restoring its brand across the nation. I think it's really good. I think he's going to be really good. But if he does what he does at Oklahoma, which is lose 1 to 2 games a season he shouldn't, he won't make the playoff in the Pac-12. That's the reality.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, go to verballers.com. Verballers.com. Mm-hmm. We will do, I think, many more episodes and much more discussion on these two jobs in particular. But we do have much else to get to, with it being conference championship week. Of course, by the time we hit stop, there'll be about 8 other news stories that drop on the coaching front. We do need to talk very quickly, though, about some of the other hires. Billy Napier to Florida was kind of an open secret, as was Sonny Dykes to TCU. Kalen DeBoer was a name that we were both really high on, getting a job, even if it wasn't Washington. Washington has decided to go with Kalen DeBoer, which I think is just a famously great hire. I love it. Brent Pry going to Virginia Tech, that just broke shortly before we hit the record button. I also think is a pretty good hire, given his familiarity with the area. Been a long time James Franklin guy. Franklin's always gone on the record and said that he wants his coordinators to be getting to the point where they can be head coaches. We've seen that happen a couple times now throughout his tenure. And Brent Pry now going to get his chance at Tech. I think he will do well there. And we mentioned Jerry Kill as well. Of those names that I mentioned, Dan, any thoughts on Napier, DeBoer, Dykes, Pry, Jerry Kill, if you want to go there?
I mean, the experience that Napier has is obviously fascinating. Different conferences, different quality head coaches, up to Nick Saban, of course. I like the hire. He's been very successful at Louisiana, not the least of which was convincing everybody to just say Louisiana instead of Louisiana Lafayette, which is not a, I saw somebody tweeting about that, not a small task. And he's won a ton of games there. He's beaten good teams. He's lost to some good teams, but by and large, he has succeeded in a way that you'd like to see a Sun Belt coach succeed in and move on to the next level. Florida should be in good hands. I'm exceedingly curious, of course, to see who he hires, because that's going to be key. And it's not that Dan Mullen didn't put together interesting classes. It's that many people felt that he was leaving talent on the board and being out-recruited and outworked by some of the teams Florida competes against on the field and for recruits. So Billy Napier has a lot of work to do there. I think it's a good hire. I don't know a lot about what he will try to do stylistically on both sides of the ball. I will go back and watch more Rage and Cage in football. I like it. I have no idea if it'll work out. I like it, though. Kalen DeBoer, I think is very strong because I think it's a good fit. I think one of the things that he brings, because he's been a head coach for a long time, going back to his time on much smaller levels, but what he was able to do with the Indiana offenses coordinator, then what he's been able to do at Fresno in developing a former Washington quarterback in Jake Haener, I think he's very good. I think one of those, it's a situation that we've talked about, Ty, where it's just like, before you win, you lose close. Before you win big, you win close. And I think incrementally, Kalen DeBoer will bring quality and professionalism to Seattle.
I harken back to something that Bruce said, Bruce Feldman, when we had him on a week or two ago, but we had talked about the characteristics that are needed at Washington. And he preached a desire for authenticity, a desire for being sort of understated. I think Kalen DeBoer has all that. You know, I don't know him that well, but the little I do, it seems he does have those qualities that Bruce mentioned. And, you know, he has been successful everywhere he's been. He is kind of perceived as this offensive mastermind as well. And that proof is pretty much in the pudding. So I like the move for Washington. The Sonny Dykes thing at TCU, I saw some folks saying, has the ink dried on that yet? Because perhaps Oklahoma is interested.
Yeah, we haven't mentioned the Oklahoma opening, which is a banger great one. An unbelievable A-plus level head coach opening is in Norman at the moment. And Bob Stoops is the interim coach, which is kind of cool and fun to see. The Barry Alvarez Memorial. Barry Alvarez isn't dead. Barry Alvarez honorary interim coach there. But I don't know. I don't know if it's Matt Campbell making the move across the conference, at least the same conference for now. I don't think it'll be Luke Fickell. I think there are interesting names.
Brent Venables is an interesting name.
Brent Venables is one that has come up for sure, and that makes sense given his history, but not so. I don't think he left on the best of terms given the success that he had in Oklahoma.
Yep, and same deal with Heupel, right? Heupel, there was some bad blood.
Correct,
there.
Yeah, they didn't renew his contract. Lincoln Riley replaces Josh Heupel as offensive coordinator, I think 2015, I want to say, was when that move happened. So there's interesting blood to be to be spun and parsed through given some of the candidates. But I think both of those guys, I mean, especially Venables, given how long he's been at Clemson and how great a job he's done there.
Yeah.
I think and given where he's from in that footprint, I think it would be a terrific hire. I don't know where they're going, but I know that Joe Castiglione, the AD, is well regarded and he will get something done pretty quickly.
Sonny Dykes, TCU, we knew that was going to happen. It seems like a very good fit for him, given his familiarity with the area.
High floor, medium ceiling to me.
The Brent Pry thing, I'll just come back to it again.
Mm-hmm.
Has done a really good job building defense for Penn State for the last five years. And has done a good job on the recruiting trail. He will build out a good staff. And I think Virginia Tech people will really like him. I mean, he's a good fit culturally for that spot. So from Altoona, you know, not all that different from being in, you know, Western/Central Virginia.
I'm excited for Oklahoma to hire a new coach and whoever, Notre Dame to hire a new coach, maybe 7 minutes after we end this
after
recording.
We end the show.
It's wonderful. Yeah. But we'll do an emergency. You know, we like doing these emergency like audio, video, stream, podcast stuff, and they've been fun. And obviously the full audio replays of those have gone exclusively to our Patreon subscribers on verballers.com. Anything else news-wise?
News-wise, Duke is parting ways with David Cutcliffe. Indiana has fired Nick Sheridan, their offensive coordinator. Also, Tom Allen agreed to a $200,000 pay cut for the next three seasons. He does have a contract through 2027. Georgia Tech has fired their offensive coordinator, their co-defensive coordinator, and their cornerbacks coach. And Colorado has fired their offensive coordinator after the worst offensive season they've ever had, at least since 1964. Dino Babers coming back for season number 7 at Syracuse. And not on the coaching trail, but Tanner Morgan has decided he is coming back for a 6th season as Minnesota quarterback.
I will also mention, just because this is a very active time in the portal, just in terms of big names, Eli Ricks, All-American caliber corner at LSU, enter the portal. I believe he's from Southern California. Jahmyr Gibbs, Georgia Tech, is going to be a very good running back. I've talked about liking him for his couple years there.
Yeah.
He has entered the portal. Zach Evans, former five-star running back at TCU. Spencer Rattler, a large name in college football. He has entered the portal. Dylan Gabriel at UCF. There's already been a lot of Ole Miss smoke given his connection to offensive coordinator Jeff Lebby. Marcus Banks, a corner at Alabama. Tyon Evans, who really flashed for Tennessee at running back. I saw Jalen Berger has already committed to Michigan State from Wisconsin. But in terms of big names, Miles Brennan at LSU as well has entered the portal. That was, I think, a week or two ago. We talked about, I think, Micah Pittman a bit, a former four-star receiver at Oregon. So big names in the portal, more to come. And especially with these coaching changes, there are going to be decommitments, there are going to be transfers, and we're going to see a lot of new look teams, as I think is the new normal in college football.
Oh, yeah. So, look, we will have another show on Friday where, again, we're going to try and decipher the news. There will be other news stories that break.
Yeah.
College football could expand its playoff tomorrow slash today as people are listening to this show. So we're going to talk as much news as we can on Friday to bring you as up to speed as we can. I realize we're zooming through it here. As always, you can go on out to our YouTube channel.
YouTube.com/TheSolidVerbal. Yeah.
And if there are big stories like Lincoln Riley leaving, like Brian Kelly leaving, like Notre Dame hiring a coach, maybe Oklahoma hiring a coach, any of these big time things, we're just flipping on the camera and going live. And then, as you said, we put that audio available for our Patreon subscribers at verballers.com.
Yeah, as I'm receiving texts right now from Jeff Schwartz with the plays he expects Oregon to both run and counter Utah with. I will not be sharing them, but that's a nice little transition as I see my texts going crazy.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know, kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Dan, time, help, I need picks of the week.
Dan, I've got it as Show Your Cards Saturday.
Ooh. Now I actually am now forgetting what I had. It's something like that. It wasn't Sack Up Saturday. It was something in that.
Look, show your cards. If you're Brian Kelly, if you're Lincoln Riley, show us what you got. What have you been hiding?
I don't think they'll be coached. They weren't going to be coaching anyway this week, but yeah.
Show your cards. Brian Kelly flipped it over. He had three jokers. Okay.
Yep.
No big deal. If you're Oregon, if you're Utah, what do you got, man? What do you got? If you're Oklahoma State, big game. Could probably make the playoff. What are you holding?
Yeah.
Cincinnati. Put up or shut up.
There's a little bit of second chance Saturday is where I would go, I think. Second chance Saturday, right. Oregon has a shot. Georgia to be able to finally get one in over Alabama. You know, Stetson Bennett had such a bad second half against Alabama last year. So second chance Saturday. But I like yours better. Yours is more fraught with emotion.
We are going to do our part here to get through all these games.
Yeah.
Let's start on Friday. We're not going in reverse order. We're starting on Friday. We're starting with the Pac-12. championship game. 8 p.m. ABC, your Oregon Ducks 10-2, squaring off in a rematch against the Utah Utes, who are 9-3. Utah is favored by 3 points. So they played this game 2 weeks ago. Yeah. Oregon lost by 31. They got run off the field. Utah had over 200 yards on the ground, and they contained that Mario Cristobal gorilla ball that you love. They contained it. Yeah. Just 63 yeah. yards on the ground for the Oregon Ducks. This was a game that was over by halftime. So I do have some questions for you, Mr. Platypus Cup.
I want to ask you a bunch of questions. Mm. And I want to have them answered immediately.
And it's really just one big question.
Yeah.
What, if anything, has happened in the last 2 weeks that should make me feel any differently about Oregon going into this game? Like, are guys getting healthy that have been hurt? Did Jeff, did anybody see something in the Oregon State game? Or maybe when Utah played Colorado, or going back over the Utah-Oregon tape? Like, give me something to grasp onto here to talk me out of picking Utah minus whatever, because I feel pretty strongly with what I saw that first time around, and I don't know if a lot's happened since then that would make me feel otherwise.
I will say Oregon is in a better position given the nature by which they lost that game, which was essentially doing nothing successfully. So Utah doesn't have a clue about how Oregon will attack Utah successfully.
So they were sandbagging.
Whereas Oregon knows exactly what Utah did on both sides of the ball to dominate the Ducks. So in a very backward way, advantage Oregon, right?
Wow.
That's my galaxy brain. My galaxy brain thinking is Oregon didn't do anything successfully. They made a bunch of mistakes. They were undisciplined, committing penalties, bad third down throws, couldn't get off the field on defense. So the onus is on Oregon to make those adjustments. And so in a way, Oregon is more mysterious. Now, Utah could beat them the exact same way they beat them the first time. You're right. They could win this game 35-13 in very similar fashion, forcing mistakes, keeping the ball and sitting on the ball the way that they did, making big special teams plays. I don't know what Oregon has done in the last 2 weeks. You're absolutely right. Anthony Brown hasn't necessarily, he hasn't played a good team to correct those mistakes. And Oregon's not healthy. I mean, they're healthier, I think, on the offensive line. There's a guard who I think is going to play in this game that played against Oregon State, and I don't think played a lot against Utah a couple weeks ago. But I think it's also there are rumors about Joe Moorhead leaving, going to Akron is where the rumor is. So it's just throw everything at Utah. If this is his last game, it's you're unloading. You are emptying the clip. Is that the term?
Emptying the clip, yeah.
So opening up the playbook. So I suppose that's the case, that Oregon has the ability to adjust in more mysterious ways than Utah does. I guess that's it. And I don't know if you can correct the discipline issues. Utah showed its hand, so it's show your hand Saturday. Utah showed its hand about how to best prepare for and execute against Oregon. So it either is going to repeat that or has to go to its backup hand, right?
I don't know,
It's you know what it is, Ty? It's a stay-on, get-off game. Because these teams are not going to win with explosive offenses. So it's converting third and threes, third and sevens. It's getting off the field on third and three and third and sevens. Right now, Utah is definitely the team better equipped to do that.
Oh, well, and look at the game that they just played. You know, like, so I'm confident that this is going to be closer than it was the first time around, which isn't saying much.
And it's away from Salt Lake. It's away from Salt Lake.
Which, yeah. It was a 31-point blowout last time around. I don't think that's going to happen again. But I'm also not blind to the fact that the blowout we saw was not like on a knife's edge. You know, there are some blowouts that hinge on two or three plays.
Yep.
And without those moments, it would have been a lot closer. That was not the case when Oregon and Utah played last time around. Again, only 2 weeks ago. Utah dominated them, man. It was like in time of possession on third downs. They converted almost 80% of their third downs in that game. And they just bullied Oregon in the running game. I guess that could have been a fluky game in some sense, maybe because of the intensity of playing in Rice-Eccles and Salt Lake. But I have not seen anything since then that would make me want to pick Oregon again. I tried that once. It did not work. I'm going Utah this time around, man.
Again,
maybe playing in Vegas, maybe that upsets the balance of the force here, and that's going to take some of the heat off of Utah. But
well, why do you believe, and it's the old adage, it's the old cliche, it's tough to beat a team twice, right? Twice in 2 weeks or 3 weeks. Why is it tough?
It's tough because of the show your cards element, right? It's tough because you've seen them once, now you know their tendencies, heads up, and you can alter your game plan accordingly. So that's why I think it's going to be closer. But if Utah plays the same style of football, and there's no reason to think that they won't, they've been doing it the whole back half of the year rather successfully.
Right.
I've got the Utes in a closer one. I think it's something like 31-24. I think Utah is the better team based on what we saw 2 weeks ago. So I'm going Utes minus the number.
My heart says Oregon. My head says Utah. I'm going to say Utah 28-24 just because I think they're specifically built more dependably than Oregon is. But I hesitate. I hesitate, and I really do think there's something to my dumb galaxy brain idea that Oregon has a much bigger self-scouting advantage in this matchup. So,
all right.
My heart does say Oregon, but if I'm making my official pick, I'm going to say, what's the spread right now? Because I have Utah winning by 4.
3 points.
Okay, so I have Utah barely covering.
Let's go to the Dr. Pepper Big 12 championship game at high noon on Saturday. This one also on ABC. It's between Baylor, 10-2, and Oklahoma State, 11-1. Oklahoma State favored by 5.5 points. Your over-under here is 46.5, like an NFL game.
Oh, I didn't even look, but okay, interesting. Yeah, my final score is right there. Yep.
Got another rematch here. These two teams played back on October the 2nd in Stillwater, and the Pokes won that game by 10, 24-14. At the time, it was Baylor's first loss. Impressively about that game, Dan, Oklahoma State won despite throwing 3 picks. And, you know, like most of the big Pokes wins we've seen this season, this game was a testament to their defense. Baylor had 13 drives in that game. I went through all of them. Only 4 lasted longer than 5 plays. So this was, again, a Pokes defense that, by and large, kept Baylor at bay. Baylor didn't do anything. Gary Bohannon was running for his life all game. The offense as a whole for Baylor was held just under 300 yards. So I have many thoughts on this game. Frankly, I went back and forth a million times. Do you have a lean here?
Yeah, I have Oklahoma State winning by 10 points. I have Oklahoma State winning 31-21, 31-20, 30-20, somewhere in there. So I guess I like the over a little bit. You said it was 46.5?
46.5, yeah.
Yeah, so I think I like the over a little bit because I don't think Spencer Sanders is going to be as bad. It's certainly a letdown spot situationally for Oklahoma State, but they are not looking past Baylor in the Big 12 championship game. I think Oklahoma State going against either Blake Shapen or a hobbled Gary Bohannon, I believe it's his right leg, so that's, you know, what he's planting on or trying to scramble, is it's tricky with a beat up, I think it's his hamstring that's hurt.
Yep.
It's just that becomes trickier against a defense this good. I don't like either a green or wounded quarterback against an excellent defense. So I'm taking Oklahoma State here to generate a couple of short fields, maybe a couple of turnovers, and win this game by 10 points on a neutral site.
I think a couple things can be true at the same time.
Definitely.
And let me start with Spencer Sanders. I'm sorry. I know this will make me sound like an idiot. Perhaps even a jerk, perhaps even a word that rhymes with D-I-C-K.
Yeah. Well, you just spelled the word.
The version of Spencer Sanders that we saw on Saturday night is not the same quarterback that I am used to.
Okay.
That I have seen, that we have seen for the last 3 years. It was a great performance by him.
Sure.
I kind of think the Bedlam game was a fluke. Not for Oklahoma State. I'm talking
for
specifically for Spencer Sanders. We have seen so much more of the other version of Spencer Sanders, the inconsistent Spencer Sanders over the course of his 3 years now for Oklahoma State. I don't know if we see 3 picks again like we did the first time against Baylor, but I'd be surprised if we saw the same sort of tour de force that we saw against Oklahoma. That's just not who he is. So it's a good game, and I hope for his sake that does it again. I hope I'm wrong.
Sure.
But I'll believe it when I see it. That's the first thing. The second thing is, with regard to this game, you mentioned Gary Bohannon and the hamstring. I think he was questionable last week. They decided not to play him. There's no reason to play him.
Right.
If he doesn't play in this game, I'm heavy on Oklahoma State. And that's no disrespect to Blake Shapen, who's looked pretty good, all things considered. But yeah. I don't love the possibility of a green quarterback going up against Jim Knowles, who's just going to bring him in waves, right?
I agree.
That's it's not a good situation for Gary Bohannon, who's got a bum wheel at the moment. It's mm-hmm. not. It's definitely not a good situation for a new starting quarterback. That's two. Three, Oklahoma State has quietly gotten better on offense. And if you look at the numbers, their offensive efficiency, it's still just average, but it is getting better. It's still not a big play offense. I do think it is important to note, though, that their young wide receivers that we've talked about all year have grown up, have been presenting more of a threat in recent weeks,
sure.
Much more so than they did back in October when these teams played. I think Baylor will be up for the challenge. But it is one of those things that if we talked about the Oregon-Utah thing, like what's changed, this is something that has changed for the better for Oklahoma State over the last 2 months that could potentially affect the outcome here. Ultimately, I go Baylor plus the points. I think Oklahoma State wins, but I think it's close. I think Baylor is a big game team in the same way that we thought Oregon was the Glory Boys team of the year.
Okay.
I think Baylor will be up for a big game here. I am also a little bit worried about that letdown effect that you mentioned earlier.
Sure.
Not that they should be looking past Baylor here. Mike Gundy will have them up, but there's a letdown whenever you beat your rival. And you got guys coming on people coming on the field here. So it's close. It's low scoring. I'd go under. I think it's a defensive war. Oklahoma State wins 23-21.
Yeah. I mean, the under Think Express captain engineer would say Spencer Sanders arguably had his worst game of the season in a winning effort against Baylor. And if we believe him to be closer to an average Spencer Sanders performance against Baylor, whatever it is, 2 touchdown throws and 6 yards, 8 yards per attempt, and maybe throws a pick, I think they're in a good place. I think Oklahoma State still has the quarterback and defensive combination advantage. So
if they win, they're in.
That's my underthinking. Yeah.
If they win, they're in, I think, especially so because of the turmoil right now at Notre Dame.
No, if they win, they're not necessary. You think they're in over Cincinnati?
If they win and if Georgia wins.
Okay, thank you. There's the, yeah.
Let's go to that game. Let's go to the SEC championship game next.
Yeah.
4 p.m. CBS. Alabama 11-1. Georgia 12-0. Georgia favored by 6.5 points. You're over under here. 51. They play this one in Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. So this is a big one, right? This is master versus apprentice. This is whatever crazy labeling you want to put on it. This is sort of all of that and a ball of wax. Coaches have met 3 times. Nick Saban's 3-0. He's won each of those games by increasing margins of 3 points, 7 points, and most recently 17 points. Frankly speaking, with all of the chaos this season, it is sort of a small wonder that both teams made it through.
True.
We've been talking about it all year. Like, it seemed as if they would be on a collision course. Alabama has had a few thinner than expected W's, but the fact that they made it through, maybe I'm in the minority here. I'm kind of thrilled that they made it through and that we get this game. I am not going to play the sound because I want to ask you a personal question.
Oh, I'm ready. Let's do it. Let's get weird.
How do you feel personally? Just Dan Rubenstein, inside that bean of yours.
Uh-huh.
About Alabama getting nearly a touchdown in this game.
Seduced. is that a good answer? Teased.
Always a good answer, Dan. Always
feathered.
A good answer.
It's enticing. It's absolutely enticing. And let me relook at what I wrote down as what my final score is. Yeah, I'm going to take the points. I'm going to take those points. It's two. I'm a romantic, Ty.
I am too.
I tingle too. Like we all do, Ty. Yep. I'm going to take the points. I think Georgia wins this game. Now, the thing that I love about Georgia is they haven't had a scare. You want to eliminate the Clemson game? They haven't had a scare. The closest a team got was, and that was what, Kentucky in garbage time, getting to 17 points.
Exactly.
A difference. 30-13, if my math holds up. So I love when teams are able to separate consistently. And the fact is, Georgia scores points and they have the best defense that college football has seen in 10 plus years. Since maybe that 2011 Alabama defense, which we still have to hold in high regard because Georgia hasn't finished things out yet. But if they finish things out and shut out a team in the national championship like that Alabama team did, yeah. So I can just count on Georgia more. Stetson Bennett has been phenomenal for this team. He's had a couple of down quarters or moments or throws he'd like back, but he has been as good as any quarterback in the country by and large at playing winning football. I am going to take Georgia here to get a bunch of stops, probably have a down quarter at a certain point, a down second or third quarter. Maybe Alabama storms back late to make it interesting. But what Alabama has and hasn't done these past few weeks scares me. The close quality of the Arkansas game, the close quality of the LSU game, the close quality of the Auburn game. Georgia beat Auburn by 24 on the road. Is that right. My number? Is that what I'm looking at here?
Yeah.
Alabama needed four overtimes. I think it was four. So I'm going Georgia here 31-27. I think Bryce Young is enough of a wild card that he will make plays against this Georgia defense. And I don't know what the health of Georgia receivers is at this moment. I know they're hopeful to get healthier there, which certainly would add a certain amount of calculus to this matchup. But Georgia does it more for me. If you're going to ask me that personal question.
Yeah.
And I am able to depend on Georgia more. That defense coming at teams in waves, the depth there, the aggression there, the coaching there. I think this is Georgia's moment. 31-27 Dogs.
Georgia, as you said, has not given up more than 17 points all season.
Yeah.
And it is truly at the point where we've run out of superlatives to describe the defense. It's one of the all-time greats. You can say that objectively. This will be a tough test for them because Bama is far and away the best offense they've seen all year. I love categorizing Bryce Young as wild card. I think that's accurate.
Yeah.
I think that's accurate. And I do think he'll make plays against this Georgia defense, albeit a very good defense, maybe the all-time best. I also want to call out that this will be a real test for the Georgia offense. The Georgia offense has been overshadowed by the defense because the defense has been so good, but the offense is also crazy efficient. Maybe it's not as sexy, but it's crazy efficient, and it's been really good under Stetson Bennett. But this is going to be a tough test. You know, they've played some good defenses, but nothing to the degree of Alabama this year.
Have they, though? Like, who is the best defense they've played since Clemson?
Auburn, Kentucky.
Yeah, I mean, Kentucky's defense hasn't been Arkansas. Amazing this year, has it? Yeah, they're all fine. But they don't, I mean, in terms of a defense built on the level of where Alabama's is, especially up front.
And so my only point here is that it's going to be a test for them. It's going to be a test for them to go up against Alabama. The Alabama defense is not as bulletproof as usual, but they got Will Anderson, and per the SP Plus, they're 11th overall in the nation.
Yeah.
It's pretty damn good. And I think that's the matchup I'm watching most closely, because if you go back to what happened last year, Stetson Bennett had three picks in that game against Alabama. He was 18 of 40. They didn't really run all that well. Stetson Bennett's got a lot better.
Were they up at halftime? Was Georgia up at halftime in that game?
It was a close game the whole way through.
I think they were, yeah.
Bama broke late. I think Stetson Bennett's really good this year, but it's just something to consider. You know, the pass is prologue, and we could use that as some sort of indicator here, perhaps, as to which direction this game goes. Different teams, right? Different circumstance. I think I agree with you. This is a close game. I don't think quite as much scoring as you've had, what, 31-27?
Yeah, by the way, Georgia was up at halftime, 24-20 last year, yeah.
I think this is a close game. I think it's led by defense. I think it's decided by special teams. I think it's decided between Brock Bowers and Jameson Williams, whoever can impact the game more. Okay. I think it's 24-20. I think it's close. I think it's a nail biter. I got Georgia winning, but not covering. That 6.5, Bama getting 6.5 points. Are you kidding me? Even if it's the wrong decision, I would probably make it 100 times out of 100 with Bama getting 6.5 points.
It's very strange to see or to be in a place where we both find it difficult to believe that Alabama can win a huge game. That's wild.
Let's move on to the American Athletic Conference Championship game, Dan.
Okay, I'm ready.
It's been a while since we included this game among the other Power Fives, but there's a reason for that because of Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
Also at 4 p.m., this one on ABC, Houston 11-1, Cincinnati 12-0, Cincinnati favored by 11 points. The only loss between these two teams was Houston losing to Texas Tech all the way back in week one. Otherwise, they've handled everyone else pretty easily outside of a few speed bumps, right? These teams did not play during the regular season, but they did play in November of last year. Cincinnati drilled them by 28, and that game was not close. Cincinnati ran for, gosh, like 350 and four touchdowns. Just not close.
Yep.
To be fair to Houston, they've come a long way on defense. They were 67th last year in SP+. This year, they moved up 52 spots to number 15. Doug Belk, their defensive coordinator, they gave him full control of the defense at the start of the year, and he's done a really good job. Houston has generated a ton of pressure this year, most importantly, without having to blitz, which is always a good formula, especially when you go up against a mobile guy like Des Ritter. I think their defense is good enough to keep this one within reach. My question for you is for how long?
I want to ask you. Yeah. That's a fair question.
For how long is the sticking point to me? Right? Because as I often do, you got to quote the wise prophet Ashanti. It's about trust, babe.
Yeah.
About trust, babe. How much do we trust that Houston can keep this close? For how long can they do it? And if they're close, can they get the dub?
I think Cincinnati is a way better team than Houston. I think Houston has beat up on a lot of bad teams. And I don't trust them. I don't trust this offense. I think the offense is inconsistent. They get off the field too much. You know, they go three and out far too often for me. I want a much more dependable offense against this Cincinnati defense. And the Cincinnati offense, frankly, that's been coming on strong of late. I have Cincinnati winning this game by two touchdowns, 34-20.
I agree.
Yeah. I think Cincinnati's going to rise. And the game is at, it's a true home game. It's in Nippert.
It's in Nippert, right? Stadium, yeah.
Yeah, I think Cincinnati, it's going to be an electric atmosphere. I think it could be 34-13 and we get a 34-20 at the end. Like, I think Cincinnati will comfortably win this game. I think they're going to force turnovers. Clayton Tune is good and has had some really good moments, but he's thrown, I think, 8 picks this year. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
I think it's going to open up relatively early.
I'm on Cincinnati here as well. And yeah. I don't trust that Houston's going to be able to keep up. Since he's playing at home with the playoff bid on the line.
Mm-hmm.
And while there have been curious moments for Cincinnati this year, it hasn't been in the biggest games on the schedule. It certainly wasn't against Notre Dame.
Right.
It wasn't against SMU, even to some extent against ECU last week, right? With finally getting into that top four, they killed them. 35-13. Yeah. It wasn't a close game. I am in on Cincinnati here. They are taking care of business at home, even though it kind of pains me because it might slam the door on Notre Dame making it through. What kind of hypocrite would I be, Dan, if I preached here at this lectern of chaos?
Yeah.
For 13 freaking years, and then rooted against a group of five team when they had a legit chance of actually making it through.
I agree.
What kind of hypocrite would I be? How could I look myself in the mirror? I'm asking.
No, I don't know if you could. Yeah, I when I look at a team that can beat Cincinnati, I want somebody who has gravitational receivers, plural. And a quarterback who is nails downfield and a fearlessness to him that I think Clayton Tune is good, but I'm going with what I think I can depend on more, which is Cincinnati's. I think they're going to overwhelm the Houston offensive line. Houston has given up far too many sacks. I think Cincinnati is going to be living in that backfield.
Since he wins 41-24, they make it through to the playoff. Let's effing go. Let's effing go, Bearcats.
I love
all the way. Let's go to the ACC championship game, 8 p.m. ABC. So many of these games on ABC this weekend.
Charlotte.
In Charlotte, Bank of America Stadium, Pitt 10-2, Wake Forest 10-2. Panthers are favored by 3 points. Your over-under is 72.5, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't play this year. Pitt's two losses were by a combined 7 points, both at home. One back in week 3 to Western Michigan, the other to Tyler Van Dyme back at the end of October. Wake's losses, one was a quote-unquote non-conference game against North Carolina, and the other was on the road at Clemson. First things first.
Lock of the week.
I don't take a lot of overs as my lock of the week, but when I do, it's in the ACC championship game.
Yeah.
This is going to be fun as hell. A ton of points are going to be on the menu. We've got ourselves an old-fashioned shootout here. I'm not going to play the sound because it'll blow our eardrums out. Maybe on the recap show.
Yeah.
Take the over 72.5 and you can thank me on Sunday morning. Okay? That's the first thing.
That's a big number. Yeah.
Secondly, I expect not only a ton of points, but a lot of big plays here. If you're Kenny Pickett, if you're looking at this defense, are you not looking at game tape and saying, dude, I'm going to take some...
Well done.
Like, you might be thinking you could win the Heisman solely on the back of a performance here because nobody knows who's going to win the Heisman this year. I think this is an active game downfield for Kenny Pickett, for Jordan Addison. Jordan Addison might get 25 catches in this game.
Okay.
I think Sam Hartman, the heartbreak kid, is also going to eat well against this pass defense for Pitt.
Yeah.
Pitt plays good defense, not always in the passing game. And this is a low-key home game for him. It's sure. Like an hour away from Charlotte. I have no idea who's winning this game. I really don't know. I don't care. I think this could be a hell of fun game to watch. And if I'm forced to pick, hell yeah, let's go Wake Forest.
You just said that. Okay, you just said so many nice things about Pitt and then took Wake.
I'm taking Wake. It's a home
game.
Wow, it's a home
game. An Ephes. And you said lock of the. Oh, you said lock of the week is the over. Okay,
lock of the week's the
over. I'm going Pitt here.
Yeah,
I like Pitt here. Yeah, I think in a game that we expect a ton of points, maybe it's similar to what we saw with the Bedlam game. You're just like, okay, who's more likely to get more stops? And to me, it's Pitt. To me, it's Pitt with the pass rush. I know they can be had through the air. We saw, what was it, Brennan Armstrong a little while ago?
Yeah,
that was
yeah.
86 combined points, 48-38. I think it's going to be something like that. I have it. Let me see what I wrote down in my prep. It's a little less. I have 38-31 Pitt. I think you're right about the... What's 38 plus 31?
That would be
69?
69. Nice.
Oh, so I have under here. Wow. I'm going against your lock. I think it'll be 14 all early in the second quarter, something like that. We're like, all right, here we go. And I think in the middle of the game, things slow down a bit before some scoring in the fourth quarter. So I have Pitt by a touchdown here, but I think there will definitely be offensive fireworks. But yeah, Wake's defense is the clear worst thing in this game. And so, especially at the end of a game, if I'm getting Kenny Pickett against an undependable defense, yeah. Is that a word? Undependable?
Sure.
I'm going Pitt here by a touchdown.
Let's head on over to the Big Ten Game of the Week presented by our good friends over at DraftKings, Dan.
Let's.
It's the Big Ten Championship game, 8 p.m. on Fox. Michigan, 11-1. Iowa, 10-2. Michigan, favored by 11.5 points. It's a big number. It's a big number. They play it in Indianapolis at Lucas Oil Stadium. So, these teams didn't play during the regular season. They've only played twice in the Jim Harbaugh era. In 2019, Michigan won 10-3.
I remember.
In 2016, Iowa won 14-13.
Mm-hmm.
So two games over 5 years, maybe not enough for a trend. But if I told you on Sunday morning, we'd be talking about a 17-14 game, that wouldn't at all be a fantastical, unbelievable notion, would it?
No, that would surprise me. That would surprise me.
Really? Why?
Yeah. I think Michigan can score more points than 17 against Iowa. And it would surprise me if they're held either to 17 or 14 points.
Wow. What's your pick?
I have Michigan comfortably. If you like Michigan, I think you have to say to yourself, okay, the offense seems to be in good hands, and where Iowa is lacking this year, the tackles on offense, the ends of their offensive line are not where they've been these past few years. Linderbaum or whatever his name is, the center, excellent. Absolutely excellent. I think Michigan's going to eat on defense. They're going to force third and longs, which is a nightmare scenario for Iowa that they're not going to be able to convert, I don't think, against this Michigan defense. Certainly a letdown maybe early on for Michigan before they, you know, have some emotional smelling salts and get into this game. But this stadium is going to be wall-to-wall maize and blue. It's going to be wall. When was the last time Michigan played a game of this magnitude on a neutral site? It's been a minute. I saw there was something like 23,000 requests for 10,000 tickets. There's going to be a lot of maize and blue here. I think it's going to be very difficult for whoever's starting this game for Iowa at quarterback to get to 20 points. And the way that Iowa's lost games, the mistake-prone nature of the offense, what was against Wisconsin, where they were just fully out of the game pretty quickly, I have Michigan winning this game 31-13.
Interesting.
Don't be safe, Ty. Don't be safe. Come on.
You mentioned something on our recap show that I think bears repeating today. Harbaugh porn.
Sure.
What is Harbaugh porn? Well, for those wondering, I believe it's the lewd act of running it, 50 times, mostly for balance, passing the ball, just to keep the defense honest, trying to wear down your opponent over 60 minutes. Let me tell you something, Dan. Kirk Ferentz Googles that late at night. Maybe after the missus goes to bed on the old Gateway 2000. Maybe with some Aerosmith jamming in the background.
I know you have a Windows 98 sound somewhere on that soundboard.
Playing on his Zune. I don't know what Kirk Ferentz does for music. But Kirk Ferentz knows all about that move, Dan. It doesn't make him scared. Quite the contrary. Maybe it seduces him too.
Sure.
If you're giving Iowa 10 points, if you're giving Iowa 11 and a half points in a game that will surely devolve into big, dumb 3-yard runs at some point.
Yeah.
11 and a half points you're giving Iowa in an obvious letdown, perhaps look ahead spot for Michigan, which hasn't played for anything in a great long time. 11 and a half points for Iowa against a team that has found creative, if not mean ways to let its fan base down for a frickin' generation?
Yeah.
Give me 11 and a half points. You don't have to understand it to take those points.
What do you think Michigan would have done with a 21-9 lead, which is where Nebraska was against Iowa last week? What do we think Michigan would do with that type of lead? That was a backup quarterback, by the way, for Nebraska who built up. That was, what's today? We're recording this on a Tuesday. It was 4 days ago, 5 days ago? This is where Iowa is as a program right now, away from Iowa City especially.
You don't need to understand it, but the occult forces of Kirk Ferentz will be on display here.
Okay.
Michigan wins the game. It's low scoring. It's 24-15. Iowa gets 4 field goals and a safety. That's how they get to 15. They don't score a touchdown against Michigan because Michigan plays
4 field goals and a safety will get you to 14.
Okay, they get to 14.
Okay.
24-14. Michigan wins this game.
I do worry about Cade McNamara, but he doesn't throw a lot of interceptions. That's not who he is. Like, Talia Tagovailoa? Yeah.
That is
who he is, and it made sense. And I picked against Iowa in that game like a damn fool. But in this matchup, by the way, Michigan, if you're going to bring the wagering element and taking the points, who's better than Michigan against the spread this year? Nobody. Yeah. 83%, number one in the country against the spread. Vegas is not quite honed in on where Michigan should be against the spread. So, yeah, everything in terms of numbers, in terms of what we've seen these past few weeks, you have to like something that we haven't seen from Iowa, because they reached a point against 3-9 Nebraska where they said the backup quarterback we brought in because the starter wasn't any good is also not good enough. We're bringing the bad starter back in. And I don't know. I just don't think, look, if you're saying this is what Kirk Ferentz Googles late at night, Brian Ferentz is using a calculator to try and Google things. That's the problem for Iowa. So, yeah, I'm going blue here.
Well, I like that I built up to a crescendo and then did the math wrong, but you're going to have to forgive me. That's just the way
it goes. We both went to state schools. We're just looking out for each other.
Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use the promo code SOLID. You bet $1 on any team to score, and you'll win $100 in free bets. If they score, again, you score with the promo code SOLID, S-O-L-I-D. This week at DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the NFL, You got to be 21 or older in New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit and $1 wager required. One per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Dan. Okay.
By the way, the last time Iowa found itself in this game, which I believe was the 2015 season when they went undefeated during the regular season, how many points did they score in Indianapolis? 13 points. Yeah.
Let's quickly go through some other important group of five games and otherwise. Dan, let's go back in time if we can.
Boo-da-doo, boo-da-doo, boo-da-doo.
Friday, it's the Ryan Conference USA Championship, 7 p.m. CBS Sports Network. Western Kentucky at 8-4, favored by 1 against your UTSA Roadrunners. Dan, play the sound.
Meep, meep.
UTSA 11-1, they lost. Is this not the battle of the Solid Verbal All-Stars?
It is. I mean, Frank Harris and Bailey Zappi. Yeah, it absolutely is.
Whose side are we going to go with here? Are you going to side with the darling of your soundboard?
Yeah.
The UTSA Roadrunners. Can you play that sound one more time?
Meep, meep.
Thank you, Dan. Or are you going to go with our guy, the Top Gun, Mr. Plucky from Western Kentucky, Bailey Zappi? Who are you going with?
I am going with the Roadrunners here.
Ugh.
And I think Bailey Zappi is going to have a wonderful, wonderful game in a losing effort. Ugh. Unfortunately, because Western Kentucky's defense is garbage. So I just, in these spots, I can't roll with it. I can't go with like, oh, this team clearly has the worst defense, but I see them pulling it out. No, I just don't. I have UTSA winning this game by 3 points. I think they, if you're able to run in a game, it makes it increasingly difficult to lose. It's possible. It's always possible. I've watched my team lose. Oh God, was it the Royce Freeman ran for like 293 yards against Wazoo in a losing effort? Definitely possible. But no, I think UTSA is just, they're going to score and they're going to control the ball. Western Kentucky will get theirs. I have it 41-38 in a bit of a shootout here in favor of the Roadrunners.
You'll have to excuse my beloved co-host, the courageous Brian Harsin, but I am locking up Western Kentucky.
Lock of the week.
Bailey Zappi's hometown of Victoria, Texas is like 2 hours away.
That's
it is
true.
An unlikely homecoming for him, as well as the other guys. There are like 18 of them now who transferred up from
true.
Houston Baptist. Give me Western. Let's lock it up. But a fun game and a lot of points.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. Western. Western all the way, baby. Let's go. Let's go.
Yeah. UTSA doesn't run the ball especially well, but Western Kentucky is they're your maitre d' or defense of the year. Right this way, sir. Right this way.
Yeah. The Rocket Mortgage MAC football championship game, 12 p.m. on Saturday on ESPN. It is the Golden Flashes of Kent State at 7-5, a 3-point favorite, squaring off at Ford Field against the Northern Illinois Huskies, Dan, who are 8-4.
Yeah.
These teams played previously back in week 10.
Mm-hmm.
Northern Illinois played like crap. It was a shootout. They played like crap. They still almost won. The final was 52-47.
What do you mean they played? Didn't Trayvon Rudolph have like 300 yards receiving this game for NIU?
Their post-game win expectancy was something like 22%. They did not play well enough to win per our efficiency numbers.
How many yards did Rocky Lombardi throw for in that game? He still threw for like 500 yards.
A million.
You can look it up.
A million yards.
Yeah, he threw for a bajillion yards. The problem is Rocky Lombardi hasn't been on the field and he hasn't been playing. And so he's beat up. He wasn't able to go last week and they started a freshman who I think threw for 19 yards. Like there was some comically low number when pushed up against what Rocky Lombardi was able to do against Kent State a few weeks ago. I remember this is too much information. This is absolutely too much information, but it was an early Saturday morning because the game was it a Friday night game? I think it was a Friday night game, this matchup. It was an early morning, whatever it was.
We're really plumbing the depths of your football brain right now.
No. I found myself on the toilet as I do most mornings after my morning brew. And I was catching up on some scores and some highlights and some college football news on my smartphone. And I saw this score and this box score and how this game went. And I remember just sitting there, as we all do, thinking to myself, well, I'm going to watch this as soon as I'm out of this room. And I did. I went back and watched the highlights, and it was pretty incredible. So we should be entertained if Rocky Lombardi has any sort of health. I have not seen an update. Hopefully he is good to go.
Kent's got five losses, three of which were to Texas A&M, Iowa, and Maryland. It's been a rough go for them in the non-con.
Yeah.
Neither team plays defense. This should actually be a lot of fun to watch. I think sort of a redux of what we saw back in week 10. Kent State runs the tar out of the ball, which is kind of fun as well. And NIU's been a nice story. They've been a good story this year because there wasn't a whole lot of expectation about this team going into the season. Let's say there was a fair amount of skepticism that they'd be able to turn it around, but it's been a good story. I'm going to go Golden Flashes. I think it's a shootout. I think they win. I think they cover, but I do expect a lot of points here.
Yeah, I have Kent State by 7. I just don't know I can't go with a team who may not have their starting quarterback who seems to be much, much better than the backup.
Mountain West Championship, 3 p.m. on Fox. Utah State at 9-3. San Diego State, 11-1. They are favored by 5 points. Dan, Blake Anderson has done a tremendous job at Utah State in year one. They beat Wazoo all the way back in week one. The problem is that this is a big play team, both for them and against them.
Yeah.
They love to give up big plays. Meanwhile, San Diego State beat Utah back in week three, a quality win if I've ever seen one. They also beat Nevada. They beat Boise. Clearly a better caliber of work here if you're looking at the full body of what they've done this season. The problem is they just don't win by much. All of their games are kind of close. So to be favored by 5 presents an interesting proposition. I still think I go San Diego State. I think they're the better team here. But I do think Blake Anderson will have the Aggies fired up and that this will be a relatively close game because, let's face it, a lot of San Diego State's games have been close.
Yeah, I think San Diego State wins this game more comfortably than you do. I think Utah State's record, there's a bit of fool's gold to it. When you look at, I mean, you're right about how those games, didn't they got drilled like 2 weeks ago by Wyoming?
They did.
Not-so-good Wyoming team.
Not-so-good Wyoming, correct.
They barely beat Colorado State, who should be looking for a new coach. I'm just not in on... I think it's a good story that you win your clunkers and you do everything you can to win as many games as humanly possible. I think Logan Bonner, you're right. There's too many big plays and there's too many mistakes, and I can just depend on a San Diego State defense to win this game more so than I can Utah State. And the game is... it's in Carson, right? Where San Diego State has a temporary home?
Yeah, excuse me. Dignity Health Sports Park in Carson, California.
Yeah. So... far away from Utah. I'm going to go San Diego State here. 26-17, is that 9 points?
You shouldn't ask me, but I believe so.
State school. Yeah, it is.
Sun Belt Championship game. Play at a Cajun Field in Lafayette, Louisiana. Before you ask, yes, Billy Napier will be coaching Louisiana in this game. 3:30 ESPN. It's App State -3 on the road at Louisiana. These teams played earlier in the year. Louisiana won by 28.
Correct.
I think it's closer, but it's an emotional spot for the Raging Cajuns. They're at home. I don't quite understand why App State's favored by 3. So I'm going home dog of the week. Where's my sound?
The Yakos. Home dog of the week.
Home dog of the week, Raging Cajuns, to cover the 3-point spread at home.
I'm going App State here. I'm going App State because I was wrong about Chase Bryce. He has been very good for them, even though they haven't been able to run the ball all that well. I still like the App State defense here, especially against the run up front. I like where App State is. And you look at what Louisiana's done this year, and it's been good. They've won a bunch of games. And they, you know, I think they rely on turnovers. I don't like that they can't pass the ball all that consistently. So if this does turn into a bit of a track meet, I don't think Louisiana's keeping up. I don't like their defense. They give up too many big plays. And I don't know. I think they've just beat up on a bunch of nothing teams. Like, App State was clearly the best team on their schedule. And yes, I include Texas. And they lost that one comfortably at home. They've already done this at home, Ty.
Yeah.
So the home dog thing, I don't know. I don't know how much water that holds, but you're talking about a 1-point win against Arkansas State, who is terrible. You're talking about Georgia State. You're talking about, I mean, a close win against Georgia State, a close win against Monroe. All due respect to Rich Rod, who's now, I think, the new coach of Jacksonville State. We didn't have that in our news rundown as Jacksonville State goes to and becomes an FBS team. I don't trust teams like that put together this type of record and don't separate themselves against low-level talent. So I'm going App State here. I think they're more impressive in the way that they play the game and can win in more ways. So I'm going Mountaineers.
And finally, it's not a conference championship game. I'm calling it the California Drive for Five.
I'm a driver.
11 p.m. on FS1. It is USC at 4-7. It is Cal at 4-7. They play at a Cal Memorial Stadium in Berkeley. Cal favored by 2 points, Dan. I'm assuming Lincoln Riley will be there or be somewhere in front of a comfortable 4K 70-inch TV.
Right.
Somewhere in the Hollywood Hills.
He'll be sitting with a recruit watching this game, yeah.
This is a postponement. They postponed it from earlier in the year because of COVID. Pac-12 after dark. Who are you going with?
I'm going with a team without the horrendously hilarious defense, which is where USC is. I think Cal wins this game by a touchdown. Cal has been better against the spread. I wouldn't say come on strong the second half of the season, but they've won 3 of 5. They beat Colorado. They beat Oregon State, which is not nothing to beat Oregon State, albeit at home. Yes, they lost to Arizona, but they blew out Stanford like every team should do, and it still hurts me. Like, that's the game that has reflected the worst on any sort of top team, Oregon losing to Stanford. And they lost to UCLA the way that they did. Whatever. I think UCLA is fine. I think Cal wins this game going away, and I'm going 7 to be safe, but I think this is not much of a competition here.
I'm going to go USC. Why not?
I'm going to tell you why not. They have the worst defense in the Pac-12. Do you know how hard that is when you have Colorado and Arizona and all you know, Stanford? Stanford, what a weird situation that is turning into. But that's difficult. It's difficult to do.
I don't know. I'm going USC. Why not? Follow my heart, Dan.
I just laid it out.
Follow my heart.
Okay. Do it. Have
fun. I think that does it for all of our games. I think that does it.
I do have a slight request. If you can drop some big stanky drum and fife, because we should honor.
Oh, baby. Friday night, FCS championship. It's the second round now.
Yeah.
7 p.m. Let me bring the music down a little bit more.
Please.
7 p.m. ESPN Plus. Holy Cross, the Crusaders, on the road against Villanova. It is 10-2 against 9-2. They played at Villanova Stadium in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Villanova, Dan, favored by 13.5 points. You can bet this game if you want to. I'm going to because, of course, who are you picking?
I'm going to the Crusaders. Are you out of your mind? Of course I'm going to the Crusaders. I'm loyal to a fault, Ty. I'm loyal here. I don't know anything about Villanova, but I do know this. Philadelphia is like an hour and a half from you?
Yeah, it's close. It's closer than that, yeah.
Some might say Philadelphia, the most underrated pizza town in America.
Ooh.
They are very strong with their pizza options. Like, I'm talking about in a world. Which I don't have children to constantly look after, I would drag you to Philly to do a pizza crawl. And so you have that available to you from a dough, sauce, and cheese perspective, and you are turning it down. That doesn't reflect poorly on you. I'm going Crusaders here to march into this underrated pizza town.
I'm going to place my bet right now. I'm going to place my bet.
What's the spread?
13.5.
Nova favored by 13.5?
13.5. Yeah.
Yeah, Crusaders outright. Come on.
Got to go. I'm not going outright. Are you nuts?
Come on. They're going to cover?
Yeah, sure. Of course. It's a playoff game, man.
I'm pretty sure Bill C does FCS SP+.
I consulted with that rating system before I decided to say cover. Yeah.
And what did you find out?
He's got it at about 12.
A near cover.
That's close enough for me as the math whiz. You know how I stand on these things.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, Dan. That does it. Long show. Appreciate everybody bearing with us here. An hour and one half strong talking all things college football coaching news and championship week. Don't forget going out to solidsaturday.com. You can be part of our Saturday live stream. We will do that before kickoff. We start at 11 a.m. Eastern time. It is on our YouTube channel one more time at youtube.com/thesolidverbal. Don't forget to subscribe while you're there. If you want a shortcut, just go to solidsaturday.com. It'll kick you right on over to our YouTube channel. Don't forget to go on out to our website, solidverbal.com. That's where you can find the articles that we post on an ongoing weekly basis, as well as all the links that you need to subscribe to this here podcast. Your subscriptions, your follows, your ratings, your reviews, all that stuff is very, very helpful. And of course, much appreciated. If you like the show, we would encourage you to do that. Verballers.com is the Patreon. It's where you can get access to bonus stuff that we do throughout the course of the week. We have been posting the audio for all of our Emergis streams as we react to this coaching news out there on our Patreon. Again, it is verballers.com. You can sign up to be a certified or premium Verballer. Oh, by the way, we're going to be playing a game that we'll talk about in just a few short days to commemorate bowl season. So stay tuned for that, but that will only be available to our Patreon subscribers.
Can tell you, I just saw a report from, I think, ESPN. Urban Meyer not interested in any college coaching jobs.
Of course not.
Committed to rebuilding the Jags. Also, the new Louisiana Tech head coach taking over for Skip Holtz is Sonny Cumbie, who looks terrific in a visor. And
very good, good in a visor. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. All right.
All right, folks. That does it for a long show. My voice is cooked. We'll be back on Friday. Don't forget again to follow, subscribe, tell your friends about the Solid Verbal. We'll be back before long going through all of this coaching news, getting you ready for the weekend. In the meantime, for that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildebrandt. Yeah, take a deep breath and stay solid.
Peace.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/youknowbusiness.